and welcome to another Trev and Ben podcast. And it's hello to the birthday boy, Ben. Happy birthday to you.
Thank you very much.
Happy birthday to you.
I'll be going through the whole thing.
I don't think we need to.
No, I don't think so.
Did you notice I put my own little tune on it, my own little rhythm?
Well, yes, because, of course, the original Happy Birthday song is copyrighted, and God knows we haven't got the money to pay, so...
No. And also, I like the idea of the dramatic pause. Because I don't think there's enough drama in birthdays. It's all very joyful. Happy birthday to happy birthday.
How much... Because there's that myth, isn't there, that under fair use, you can use a certain few seconds of something. So how far can we get into the copyrighted version of Happy Birthday before we have to hand over some cash?
Well, I think first of all, that theory is nonsense.
It is, isn't it?
I think so. I've never understood this. I've asked people, I've read about this, and people give you different things. There's the fair use thing. There's the thing, if you're using something for, critiquing. So we could critique the Happy Birthday song and probably use it.
Because I've seen people on YouTube, they do this sort of thing where they review or react to TV shows.
Yeah.
And they'll basically play a full episode of a TV show and they'll have themselves in the corner of the screen and they'll be just basically reacting to it, saying almost nothing for the full 30-minute episode.
Yeah.
But because it's under the sort of veil of review or critique, they can basically just plaster copyrighted material all over YouTube. I'm sure that...
Yeah. I don't understand it. I think we're sort of at a point in time now where... I don't know. I understand certain things need to be protected. I get that, right? But I'm also now the sort of thing, if you stick something out on YouTube or social media, then I think it's fine for other people to use it, as long as they're not making money out of it. I get if someone's making money out of your stuff. But like, if we were to use something on this podcast, I'd really resent the fact that we couldn't use it. We make nothing out of this. And I just sort of think, I should be able to use anything on this and it wouldn't matter.
Don't tell people that. People think we're really successful millionaire podcasters, don't they?
No, they don't. No, they don't. We know that we're a couple of radio failures who've now embarked on this incredibly... vain project.
I mean, it is a vanity project, but, you know, it gives me an excuse to keep in touch with you, doesn't it?
Yeah, I mean, it is basically our once-a-week chat that we just happen to record. do we ever think of anything that, you know, might be useful to anyone listening? You know, like a lot of these podcasts come up with useful information, inspirational stuff. By the way, Ben, now it's your birthday. You've reached the ripe old age of 36. You know, perhaps you could impart some knowledge. You know, tell us what you've learned about your 36 years on Earth. We could call this the Guru Ben podcast. This could be a whole new venture for you, Ben. Imagine if after this episode goes out, you start getting a lot of messages on social media. People go, oh, Ben, you've changed my life with your inspirational messages.
What, just because I've reached the age of 36, just because I haven't died yet, that means sort of life coach?
I'm just thinking that you've probably, you know, you've reached that point, you've gone past the mid-30s now. You know, it's a bit of a pivotal moment in your life. 40 is on the horizon. Thought maybe you've had a bit of a chance.
Don't say that. There's no need for that.
Oh, it is, Ben. It's coming over the hill, and it comes so quickly now, Ben. Speaking of a man who's been there, done that. Jesus Christ, it comes quickly.
Oh, man.
I remember being 36. You still think, yeah, I'm young. Got loads of time ahead of me. Suddenly, I'm nearly 47. Withered, decrepit, cynical, miserable.
The problem with me passing down advice to the younger generation or the younger is that I know very much for a fact I would have ignored me 10 years ago completely.
Come on, there must be something that you can share with us. I mean, look, maybe there's those things. You know, like people put all those things on social media. I came across one this morning. I mean, you know, people think, oh, I'm the person that can really have an impact on someone's day. This popped up on my feed this morning. You have to believe in yourself when no one else does. That makes you a winner right there.
Oh, it's dripping with false platitudes and smarm and oh no, I don't like that. No, don't believe in yourself. But be like everyone else. Be dripping with anxiety, questioning yourself and doubtful, because you're not perfect. You're not, you know, good to go. No one is. You need to get your shit together.
What part of inspirational are you not understanding?
I'm a realist.
They followed that one up with whatever you give out in life must return to you. It's the physics and the mathematics of the universe. Bullshit. I mean, no. I always feel the world hasn't given back what I've given it.
I mean, just think about, and I'm not even going to pick a side here, but just think about how greasy and untrustworthy your average politician is, and think of their salary. And then think, you know, are they getting back what they're putting into the universe? Probably not. My biggest thing is it usually costs nothing to be nice. Manners cost nothing, as they say.
Yeah.
Be nice. And it usually gets you a lot further. I know people say nice guys finish last, but I would say be nice. And you'll probably get a lot further than you'd think.
It's interesting that, because that whole thing about nice guys...
Because you think I'm a dick. That's
well, no, but I'm not sure about... Because he sort of... I'm not saying that there aren't nice people who do well, right? There are nice people who go far. But I think a lot of people who get to the top... Because I think you have to be a bit of a tosser to want to climb the greasy pole as much. Do you know what I mean? So I think there is an element of narcissism, of arrogance that comes with needing to be at the top of the tree. And I don't know if they're necessarily always nice people.
Well, I can tell you from my own experience, if someone approaches me and says, I'm really sorry to bother you, can you help me? I need this favour. And if the same situation happens, but somebody approaches me and says, excuse me, I've been waiting all day, where is this? Then I am much more likely to help the first person in that situation. They will get whatever the favour is they're requesting. Person number two, they can wait a day or two. They're at the back of the queue. Don't like it. I don't react well to hostility. I don't like it. Manners cost you nothing. Be nice.
I am in agreement with you there. Try to be a rainbow in someone else's cloud.
The fuck does that even mean?
That's a well-known person said that. Maya Angelou, who's a respected writer. But what a lot of old tosh.
Well, the more I think about it, she might be onto something. Because I have been recently trying to take what you could describe as being the rainbow in somebody else's cloud. There's someone, and I won't go into details, but there's someone at the moment in my life who is being... a complete and utter dickhead to me on quite a regular basis.
Yeah, I'm sorry and, about that. It's just, you know, well, when we start talking, I can't help myself. It's like, oh, here he goes. Jesus Christ, he's off again.
And my approach has been to not rise to the bait. And I thought, you're spoiling for a fight. You want me to raise my voice. You want me to, you know, bark back. I'm not going to do it. I'm not going to rise to the bait. In fact, every time you're nasty to me, every time you say something which gets on my tits, I'm going to be that little bit nicer to you. And it's working a treat, killing them with kindness, because the kinder I am to this asshole, it's almost winding him up more.
Right.
So I am being the rainbow in his storm cloud, but not because I'm wanting to be a rainbow, because I'm wanting to wind him up.
you're using your rainbow ability as a weapon.
Yes, I'm a weaponized rainbow.
Wow. That's a great quote. That could be your quote. Put that up on social media. Use your rainbow as a weapon.
Yeah, I might put that in my X bio. Ben Harmer, weaponized rainbow.
That could be the name of your book, Weaponized Rainbow. I mean, it sounds like it could be like a really violent remake of a 1980s children's show. Bungle goes on the rampage. Zippy is just, he's overstepped the mark. Bungle goes fucking, actually it'd be better if George goes mental. Because Bungle always feel, like Bungle was a bear. He could go mad at any time. I mean, I always think Bungle's probably now dancing on a hot plate in Romania, but... But George, like, he's going, oh, yes, it's a bee. And you can just imagine him one day just going, fuck this shit, taking out an Uzi and taking them all out. Rod, Jane, and Freddie.
I mean, to be fair, Zippy has been pushing his luck for fucking years.
I know, why did someone just fucking zip him up? He's got a fucking zip. Use it.
Why did no one think of that?
I'm sure they did. I'm sure there were occasions where Jeffrey had enough and zipped him up, but it was always a brief punishment. It should have been more prolonged. Have you ever seen the early pictures of Bungle? Like in the very early episode. I don't know whether these are faked pictures, but occasionally they pop up on my timeline. The original Bungle. It looks like he's been mauled to death by another bear. It's a dreadful outfit.
So, no, I'm going to have to look into that, though, now. We're going to have to... maybe we could post a picture of original Bungle.
By the way, have you ever seen the... there's a thing on YouTube that people often think was a genuine episode where it was just full of absolute innuendo.
Yes, and it was the... I know exactly what you're talking about. The double entendre.
Yeah.
Littered rainbow. You know, we're going to play with our twangers, kids.
Yeah, but it was just... they made it as a spoof, but people always go, oh, this... It's a bit like the old Captain Pug Wash thing, and the names, they weren't the names.
Were nonsense. They not?
No. People have sort of, that's become the myth that those were the names. But if you look up Captain Pugwash, the names of the characters aren't those names that people think they were.
So it's not Seaman Swallows and all that sort of stuff. No, really? No. I mean, I must admit, I'd fallen for that myth, hook, line, and sinker. I really believe that was just a dirty sort of joke hidden in a kid's show, which happens a lot, by the way.
Yeah, but it wouldn't be that sort of bad, would it? It would just, it wouldn't have, even in the 70s, wouldn't have got away with that.
Really?
Yeah, you could never have had, like, whatever you just said.
Well, you can't even dare to repeat it, no?
There was obviously Captain, but I'm just looking up the characters now, right? So you had Tom the cabin boy. People often think that was Roger the cabin boy.
Right?
There was a character called Willie. I'll give you that. There was the mate or master mate, but not as
master Bates.
Yeah, there wasn't that. There was Cutthroat Jack, Jonah, Donna Bonanza. You know, there's none of that nonsense that people talk about.
Okay, well, I didn't know. Every day's a school day. You see, that'd be another one of my little my little life lessons. Every day's a school day. You're never too old to learn. Be the rainbow in the education system.
Be a weaponized rainbow at school. I don't think we should be inciting violence in schools. People going around with different kind of crayons, putting a rainbow mark on people's faces, beating the shit out of the teacher and leaving a rainbow mark. I've just read this on the Wikipedia page. See, every day's a school day. You learn this. Back in the 90s, the Pugwash cartoonist sued a Sunday correspondent for a newspaper for inaccurately claiming that some of the character names were double entendres. So it even went to court.
What were they hoping to gain from that lawsuit?
What, the cartoonist?
Yeah.
Just to say, stop spreading the rumours that I was a dirty bastard. I'm making disgusting cartoons for kids.
I'm with you now. So they were suggesting that it was the cartoonist who'd come up with these obscene names.
Yeah, yeah. So
I'm with you now.
The original cartoonist took the correspondent who started to spread the myth about those names to court.
Quite right. But there's another one of my little life lessons. Don't be so litigious. Don't take yourself so seriously. The whole suing each other culture needs to stop. It's very not our side of the pond. We don't do that really here. Take a joke, move on, live and let live. Yeah, there you go. There's another little 36 years on planet Earth life lesson.
Live and let live. That's your...
Live and let live.
Live and let live. That's an original line from Guru Ben. Here's another one for you. You can't turn back the clock, but you can wind it up again. What does that mean?
What does that mean? To me, that means you can't undo your mistakes.
Yeah.
But you can also not die. You can just keep going, but that, I mean, keeping living doesn't mean winding up the clock. You just leave the clock alone.
Maybe it just means that you don't let regret stop you from moving forwards. Maybe that's what it means. Oh, I've gone all philosophical.
No, I get it. I get the concept of you can't wind back the clock. I understand the message in that. You can't undo the past. No point worrying about it. But
don't let the clock stop. That's what you're saying. Don't stop your life. You know, just move on. Yes, put it behind you.
You don't
wind the clock.
No. You don't need to wind up the clock for things. If the analogy is that winding back the clock is your life undoing mistakes, then you don't need to continue winding the clock. The clock keeps ticking until it stops.
Well, you know, but some clocks you can't just not whatever wind. Some clocks need a wind, don't they? You
got, what, so is this an analogy for a life support machine or a pacemaker or something? What is this?
It's probably saying you've got to keep the clock wound, is what it's saying. Make sure you keep the clock. I don't know what it means.
It's bollocks. It's just some shit someone's come up with and they think it sounds pithy and clever, and it's not.
Do you remember that nursery rhyme or that song about the old man dying and the clock stopping, never to go again when the old man died?
Yes, I do, yeah.
Remember that song? I mean, that's quite a dark song, isn't it? That the clock, the moment the man died, the clock stopped and would never go again.
Never to chime again or something.
Yeah, never to go again, that's right. Yeah, the clock.
When the old man died. Yeah, it's a very bleak song.
Yes, it is a very bleak song. There's no positivity, unless the second verse went on to talk about someone coming and winding the clock, but I don't remember that at all.
Maybe that's where the expression comes from. There's the hidden second verse from that song that we've never been familiar with, that he came back to life after some bastard wound it back up again. Yeah, but perfect.
Yeah.
Makes perfect sense.
It to the repair shop, got it sorted out. I quite like that. There's something quite romantic. I sort of hope that when I shuffle off this mortal coil, there's a clock that stops, never to go again.
Well, I mean, in a way, you could say that this podcast comes out like clockwork.
Yes.
Every Wednesday, 6 p.m, bang, there it is on your phone, ready for your listening pleasure.
Yeah.
And when you snuff it, then that'll stop, because I'm not fucking carrying on with this.
You're also assuming we're going to keep this shit going till I die. I mean, how long do you think
I've
got left?
I'm also assuming I won't die first.
I'm not sure we've got 30 years left in this, to be honest.
I'm not sure we've got 30 minutes left in this.
Now, Ben, did you celebrate your birthday? Did you go out for a drink? Did you go to the pub? Did you get a little bit pissed?
I did. I went out. There's a mate of mine who I only see once or twice a year.
Thanks for the invite.
I've seen you recently. There's a little mate of mine who I only see once or twice a year. He'll hate me calling him a little mate as well.
I was going to say a little mate, like, you know.
And yeah, we went out for an absolute session.
Did you pop him in your pocket? Did you take him out for the day?
So yeah, we went out for a big old drink. I think it started only just in the afternoon and finished up quite late on. It was a big one. So yeah, have you been out recently celebrating my birthday? Have you? Or?
Well, I was out in a pub. I mean, whether I celebrated your birthday, that's open to question. I think I might have raised a glass to you.
I don't believe you.
No, I didn't. But did you come across anyone in the pub? We were in a pub the other day with some friends, and it was one of those things where, now, we got to the pub and I immediately needed to go to the loo. So I went downstairs to the loo, and now I'm a bit of an old-fashioned fella. I don't like it when somebody talks to me while I'm at the urinal.
Now, without wanting to get too graphic, is this what we refer to as stage fright?
Well, I wasn't in a position for stage fright. I was pretty desperate. So stage fright didn't take hold on this occasion, but it can do. But I went in and there was a man. I could see this guy was absolutely hammered, right? And he said hello. Now, that was before I got to the urinal. That's fine. I said hello as I walked by. But then he continued the conversation as I was at the urinal. And he started talking about feeling lonely. And I was thinking, oh, God, not just... go away. And then he tried to get out of the toilets and he asked me if this was the door as he was looking at the door.
Okay.
And I said, yes, that's the door. That's the way out. But the door was open against the wall. So he just started pushing the door against the wall rather than walking out of the open door. And I was thinking, oh, Christ, well, at least he's gone. And I go back up to our table and my friends, and he's on the next table. And I'm thinking, oh, it's a bit close, but okay. But then he decides he wants to come and join us. Now, we're a nice bunch of people, and we offered the hand of friendship, but hoped it would be a very brief friendship. And I've got to say, we did have a little bit of a sacrificial lamb, because we kind of left him to one of my friends while the rest of us talked amongst ourselves.
Oh, how could you do that?
But he was one of those guys, he was going on and on and on, and he was... like, I'm a very cynical man these days. I don't believe half of what people tell you in a pub. I just don't, right? And he was going on about he'd fought in this war, he'd done this, he'd done that. He may well have done, but I'm very cynical. I think, no, you haven't. You haven't done any of this. You haven't done any of this. But then he started to get slightly angsty. He was having a go. My mates who was taking one for the team, he has Irish roots. And it was really weird because the guy went, oh, I hate the Irish, but all my friends are Irish. And it's like, what's all this about? And then he was going, don't worry, if it kicks off here, I'll turn the place upside down. You think, right, I think it's time for us to move. So we moved on. You think, why do they always pick me and my table? Why do they pick me and my friends? We just want a quiet night out. Do you get people like that? Did anyone come up to you while you were out celebrating?
What can I first of all say? I have been out with you. And I don't know what it is about you. I think it's because you're simply too nice and you don't tell people to do one or piss off. But you, and I've got a couple of other mates who are the same type of person, who are just freak show magnets. Like, that they don't usually bother me because I won't really tolerate it for very long. But you, I think you almost encourage them, or you sort of indulge them. You ask them too many questions. You don't just like, yeah, okay, mate, and then just walk off. You start asking questions. I think you're your own worst enemy.
I mean, the one on Saturday, there was a bit of me thinking, let's not invite him to the table. But it does, you know, there is that thing, like, me and my friends, we're nice people. There's that thing you feel like, oh, okay, he's on his own. He's already said how lonely he's feeling. He's like, yeah, okay, Joe. But I think my mate even said to him, come join us for a little while. But that little while turned into a good half hour, 40 minutes, by which point we're like, yeah, he's not going, is he? Time to move on.
But, I mean, case in point, I mean, I approached you about 15 years ago and you didn't have the good grace to say, you know, I haven't got the time, mate. And now 15 years later, you're still stuck with me.
God, I keep trying to get rid of you. I think the only way is I'm going to have to kill you eventually. But
I often wonder, I think I would possibly be the sort of person in the pub that if I bumped into you, you would be desperately trying to shake off.
I mean, would you be the sort of person that would talk to randoms in a pub?
Absolutely. I'll talk to someone. But if they start becoming a curse, then I will get rid of them quickly.
I always think if you were to approach me in a pub, it depends on how much you've had to drink. But what would be your first topic of conversation? I mean, because that's the thing. Like, I think these people tend to have their little speech that they have. So whenever there are new people in a pub, that's what they go and talk to them about. So I reckon this guy on Saturday, I reckon whoever he chooses to talk to, his first line will be about how he feels sort of out in the cold a little bit, how he's on his own. And that's his little gambit. That's what he always does. Then he'll go on about the wars and stuff. And like I say, he may well have done that if he has. Hero. Well done, sir. But if he hasn't, it's just pub bullshit.
It's stolen valour is what it is.
Yes.
I don't know. I don't think I have I mean, you know me quite well. You've seen me pissed a few times. Do I typically have a bugbear or a subject that I rattle on about endlessly when I'm pissed? I don't think so.
No, I don't think you do. I mean, I've got friends who I know will talk to randoms in a pub, and they have their things. Like my friend Mr. Conspiracy, he will often get talking to people in a pub about a conspiracy. That's his little gambit. There'll be one thing, like he'll be at the bar and he'll overhear something, and it's like someone presses play on his little CD player, and he'll turn to them and go, oh, I have new people to share my nonsense with, and off he goes. And then the next thing, I'm then embroiled in this triangle of bullshit that I'm now part of because my friends started talking to randoms. See, I don't, although I try and be nice, I tend not to talk to randoms in pubs because I know what it brings. I know the pain and the misery it can bring. So I try not to do it, but I tend to always end up being in that situation because I'm either with someone that will talk to a random, or the random will choose us, and we're, as you say, we tend not to just say fuck off, mate.
Well, I'll give you a few examples of the things I got up to whilst I was out, and this is all things that I've been told that I did.
All right, so you have no recollection of any of this?
Not really, no.
Okay.
Mrs. Ben got a phone call as I was on my way home.
Yeah.
And she wondered for a moment if it was genuinely me on the phone.
Right.
Because she said, your voice didn't sound right. It sounded far too deep. It sounded like someone doing a bad impression of you. And I sort of thought, okay. And it turns out, apparently, this was because on the way home, I had been very loudly singing a sort of multitude of Billy Joel hits quite loudly.
And hang on. On your way home, you've been singing a multitude of Billy Joel hits. To who? With whom?
Myself.
With your friend? With your little friend? Which little friend there on the piano playing away?
My little friend had gone by this point. I'd left him to it.
You're just singing Billy Joel songs out loud on your own. What, on a train?
Where you're walking? Oh, yeah, Ben. Apparently I even FaceTimed her at one point. When I got home, she said, what happened to your cup of tea? I said, what cup of tea? Apparently I'd bought and lost a cup of tea somewhere the journey on the way home.
Wow. And also, see, the thing about this was how, well, you won't remember, but how busy was the train? I mean, because if I'm on a train and someone starts singing Billy Joel, I'll be thinking, oh, Christ. Oh, God.
To be honest, the train journey home seemed a lot faster than the train journey there. So I don't remember. I may have lost
consciousness. Billy Joel songs famously have an impact on time. I mean, often Billy Joel songs make things seem longer.
Yeah. I don't think that's fair.
Sorry, I didn't realise you were such a fan.
I told you the other day my affinity for Billy Joel.
What songs were you... I mean, he does some great songs that he was in. What songs were you singing? Do you
remember? Familiar podcast listeners will know. Piano Man is my big go-to ballad.
And that's a long song as well, isn't it? That's a good sort of 6.5 minutes or so, isn't it?
Also, the biggest red flag, according to Mrs. Ben, was that I came home wearing a fedora that I hadn't left the house wearing.
Wow, a fedora. I mean, what sort of fedora was it? Was it sort of one of those almost disposable ones? Or was this quite a good quality?
No, it's a very disposable one. I think basically what happened was me and my little mate, we went to a German...
You carry him home in the fedora.
We went to a German bar, got very pissed. Yeah. And at some point, I took it upon myself to steal a fedora.
Wow, that's something, isn't it?
Yeah, I'm not proud of it, but it happened. So
I once bought, when I was very pissed once, I was with a friend and we got in a cab and we dropped her home first. But on the way to dropping her off, she took a liking to the cab driver's hat. It was a sort of trilby type thing. And I ended up buying her the hat.
Wow.
Yeah.
What was the bartering process like for that?
I think I just went, can I buy your hat, mate? Because she really likes it. And he went, yeah, all right. I think it was a fiver he charged me for his hat. It couldn't have been a great quality hat. I just think how greasy and horrible that might have been. I bet that in the morning she woke up thinking, why the fuck have I got some manky trilby? But, you know, it's the sort of thing you do after a few beers, isn't it? You buy someone's hat.
So, I mean, that's incredible. Yeah, because it's one of those things you'll wake up the next morning and think, what on earth? Where has this come from? How did I acquire it? Why is it greasy? Just no idea. And then you start talking to the other person in the house who was sober, who then just drip feeds you little clues to your previous night, and it all starts coming back to you very slowly in little dribs and drabs.
I'm pretty good in that when I do drink, very rarely do I have sort of no recollection of what's happened. But sometimes you have those moments, particularly if you've woken up the next day and you find something. I remember once... I'd been out with some friends. I remember a lot of the evening, right? But the next morning I woke up and on my bedside cabinet was one of those, you know, those plastic glasses with a with a plastic nose and a moustache?
Oh, yeah.
Now, I'd obviously worn that home at some point and before I'd gone to sleep, taking it off and putting it on the bedside cabinet. And I was thinking, how long did I wear that for? Like, was it the whole train journey home? I have no recollection of getting it or how I got it, but it was there and I'd obviously worn it. The other thing I did once, whereas I'd been out and I got home, and I do remember getting home and being very drunk and sort of falling asleep in the hallway upstairs, not quite making it to the bed, right? But then waking up and the whole of the top floor was strewn with rubbish. For some reason, I'd emptied a rubbish bag all over the hallway. To this day, I cannot tell you why I'd done that, what caused me to want to empty this bag of rubbish all over the hallway.
The thing is, there would have been a reason. It would have made perfect sense at the time of doing it, but you'll never know why.
I never know why. It's always been a mystery. Like, most things come back to me. You know, most things are, you think, oh, yeah, like, but where I got that plastic moustache and nose and glasses from, that's never come back. And why I emptied a bag of rubbish over the hallway, that's never come back to me. I will never know why I did that.
Now, you see, I think that you and I could have a fantastic night out.
Yes.
But I think I'd have to get you pretty well oiled to get to the place where we're both having a great time. Because I'm just imagining you sort of, I'm thinking about 8 p.m. whilst it's still, you know, decent-ish time. And then I, you know, you're sitting at your pub table having a little drink.
Yeah.
And then I come over, fedora on, Billy Joel, cup of tea, singing away. Now, I think you'd want to get away from me.
Oh, God, yeah, I'd see you coming up. Well, to be honest, if I see anyone coming towards me, probably in a hat, I start thinking, oh, God. I mean, I do like a hat. There's nothing better than a drunken wearing of a hat. But if I see someone coming towards me in a hat, I always think, oh, God. This isn't going to end well.
If we eventually did both get fairly well hammered and we were going home together, it would look like Groucho Marx being followed by some sort of umpah band.
And a Billy Joel lookalike. I was going to say sound alike, but I bet you didn't sound that much like Billy Joel.
No.
Did you sing to Mrs. Ben when you got home?
I think I did, yes. I think the first thing I did was get home and put Billy Joel on the TV at the loudest possible volumes. I'm sure the neighbours are thrilled with me.
Yeah,
And then I think I went quite swiftly to bed before I fell down.
But those people that do come to you in a pub, I mean, I remember being in a pub once when, I mean, again, I found myself in lots of situations with friends who talk to random people, but I found myself in situations, I'm sure I've told you this before, when I was in a pub with a friend of mine who always talked to the people that were, you know, a kind of busy pub, you might have to share a table. Now, I always thought that was a bad move because the best thing is just to ignore the other people on that table. Don't interact with them. They're doing their thing. We're doing our thing. Let's not mix the two. But often, after a few drinks, that line, that sort of invisible line moves. And
it
you
does.
Start to interact. And on a couple of occasions, I've found myself out and about with people I don't know. I was in a pub once. We met this Australian couple. My friend got talking to them as the night went on. They seemed good, fun couple. We were having a laugh. And then they went, oh, do you know of a club nearby? And we went, oh, yeah, there's a really good pub in Soho. Let's all go. So I was like, okay, let's all go. We get in a cab. Now, things turned a little bit odd in the cab because the Australian bloke started getting a little bit sort of uppity with me and my mate because we didn't know the words to the folk tune The Streets of London, the Ralph McTell folk tune. You know, how are we supposed to, just because we live in London doesn't mean we know the song, does it?
I mean, I know the song, but I'm not sure I'd know it word for word.
Well, no, I mean, all I could muster was The Streets of London. That's about all I could do. I think I might knew a little bit more. You know, unfortunately, he wasn't asking for a Billy Joel track, otherwise it would have been fine.
It could have been straight on the phone. I'd have helped you out.
Anyway, we get through that. Between me and my mate, we muster enough of The Streets of London to placate him. And then we get to the club. It's a busy club. I don't like clubs anyway. We get in and then we get separated. So he goes to the bar with the guy. I'm with the woman and she then starts. Well, to cut a long story short, it turns out I think they thought we were a gay couple. They were swingers. I think they thought things might happen. So she'd had a conversation with me while I was on my own with her. He'd had a conversation with my mate while they were alone at the bar. My mate came back with him. And I said, should we go, mate? And he went, yes. It's like, none of this was necessary if we'd not spoken to them. If we kept ourselves to ourselves.
Brings up is she was with her partner and she thought you were a gay couple.
Well, I don't know what she thought.
So what was in this arrangement for her?
But I don't know what she thought. I don't, all it seemed was they wanted to, you know,
the right, four, say of more.
Be, four of us would be involved somehow, and it was like, let's just move, let's go. I just thought, but see, this is the thing, don't talk to people. We ended up once having, there was a guy, he was in a pub, and he was I can't remember how we got into it, but my mate ended up having quite a big argument with him about it was all about setting up a charity to help homeless people or something like that, right? And I got
sounds
so
like a
pissed.
Noble cause.
And this, yeah, but this row was going on and on and on. And because the guy was sort of, he was saying, yeah, but you know, I can't do it. It's up to other people to do it. And I think my mate was basically going, don't look, you know, if you want to help, you've got to go and do it. You've got to go out and do it. And then I just the row was going on and on. And eventually I went, look, I tell you what, you phone me on Monday and I help you set up a homeless charity. And I spent the whole weekend thinking, I hope he doesn't fucking phone. Because I don't know the first thing about setting up a homeless charity. But yeah, I could have done. He didn't phone. But imagine if he'd phoned me on the Monday and went, oh yeah, do you remember me? Yeah, we're going to start a homeless charity. Yeah, mate, I don't think so.
No, I don't think that'll happen. But I mean, I've been sucked into your web of lunacy and pop before. I remember once we went out for a drink just to have a little celebration, something or other. And it may have even been an after show drink from some radio station or another. We ended up in a Wetherspoons and there was someone there who was drunk off his face, who started and continued to give me quite a lot of quite hostile anti-Semitic abuse.
Yes, he did.
Which was surprising for two reasons. One, because I hadn't said anything to him or given him so much as a dirty look. And two, because I'm not Jewish.
That was a weird one, because that had the potential to turn as well. Because I think we were being very polite about it. We were just going, yeah, okay, mate, probably best to be quiet and leave us alone. And
what happened with him?
Did we have to get a member of staff involved?
Eventually, but then he carried on for a bit. Then he calmed down. And then it turned out he was blind drunk because he had a flight coming up this afternoon,
right,
which I will bet my bottom dollar he did not get on. And he had this terrible chronic fear of flying. So his solution to this was go to a Wetherspoons at 11 a.m, get fucking smashed, and then, you know, start hurling anti-Semitic abuse at me for no reason. But then I sort of, after I'd found this out from him, I started trying to comfort him and make him feel better. And I thought, how have I got in a situation where I'm now comforting this anti-Semitic racist bastard who has been nothing but horrible to me, and I'm now trying to be an arm around the shoulder about, oh, don't worry, everyone's got a fear of flying, it'll be all right, you know. How does this happen? It's because of you.
The thing is, I don't think he needed to hear Piano Man. Now, Ben, before we finish this week's podcast, I just want to share with you something I've been reading this week that I think is absolutely fascinating.
Oh, good. What have we got?
Now, I came across this article about scientific theories from the past that never really took off, because I think people knew they were nonsense from start to finish, but they were scientific theories that fairly eminent scientists were proposing. For example, there was an idea back in the 1850s that milk could be used to replace blood in people. So you could give people milk transfusions if they were losing blood.
Right. And, I mean, the obvious question is why? Like, was there some sort of thinking as to why that would work?
So there was a couple of guys called Dr. James Bovell and Edwin Hodder. And they injected a man with 12 ounces of cow's milk, and they believed that the fatty particles in milk would become essentially white blood cells.
What?
That's what they thought. They thought the fatty particles in milk would transform into white blood cells while they were in your body. So therefore, it could become a substitute for blood transfusions if people... I mean, I'm sure in the 1850s, blood transfusions weren't probably a common thing.
But this is ludicrous. Because if you get so much as an air bubble in your veins, that'll kill you pretty quickly. So I can't imagine that two pints of semi-skimmed is going to do you many favours. That's going to really kill you fast, isn't it?
Yes, I mean, it seemed like the guy that they put some cow's milk in survived. It seemed...
What? Into his blood?
But they only put 12 ounces. I mean, 12 ounces isn't a huge amount. I'm sure if you were to put a lot, like if someone had lost several pints of blood and you just popped out to Tesco's, well, I would just replace it with this. But don't worry, it's Cravendale. It lasts a long time. But I mean, the idea of this went on for several years, up until about 1884. And then people thought, actually, let's not research this any further. I don't think we need to look into this anymore. But for about, 30 odd years,
yeah,
this was an idea.
I mean, I wonder how many times they repeated that experiment before they realised it's not working, is it?
Well, according to the thing I read, it said that, there were some successes in the sense that the patient didn't die. But again, it was probably only small quantities of milk that were used in the procedure.
Right. Yeah, that's... See, I wouldn't chalk up not dying as a success. I mean, a cure is a success. Not dying isn't really proving anything other than that you haven't killed them.
But think about the time frame in the 1880s. If someone came in, they got some ailment, they're losing blood, and then you replace that blood with milk and they don't die, you go, well, that's obviously worked, doesn't it? That's a success.
I guess so. What doesn't kill you makes you stronger, I guess. It'll be all the calcium.
But they could have tried other substances. Could have gone with a good stout. That's supposed to be full of iron, isn't it? That could replace blood, could it?
Well, alcohol tends to perk people up a little bit, doesn't it? It
makes
you feel a bit stronger.
Yeah. Sprite. give you a lot of energy, wouldn't it? Put some Sprite in. I think this is an area of research that we should reopen. Because let's face it, none of us like giving blood. I only give blood. I'm terrible. I admit this. I feel that I probably should be a blood donor, but I'm not. I only give blood when I really have to for blood tests. If there was something that would take that guilt away from me not being a blood donor, then I'd be happy if they went, oh, well, now we can just inject people with milk, so we don't need people to donate blood.
I'm surprised they haven't been able to synthesise some sort of artificial blood substance by now that would work. Well, aren't you?
Yeah, I suppose. I made a radio advert just this very morning for people needing to donate blood. We shouldn't have to be making adverts for that now. If we've got a substitute, you're right, in 2024, we shouldn't need that sort of advert to go out. It would just be, donate a pint of milk to the cause. I mean, much better, wouldn't it? If we can make...
Yeah.
If we can make... Surely in 2024, we've got the technology to make milk work. in the 1880s, you probably couldn't. Now, let's get on it.
Okay.
Why are these science bods doing? Think about the implications for the economy. We could bring back the milkman. You don't get the milkman as much these days, do you? I can't remember the last time I saw a milk float, but they'd have little blue lights on now if they're going.
Yeah, they'd have old blues and twos. Yeah.
Go a bit quicker than the old 5 miles an hour. Can you imagine that? Come on, we've got to get there. Blood transfusion. Yeah, well, I'm only going at 5 miles an hour. Jesus. So
what other discoveries have you found?
There was a thing called the World Ice Doctrine. Again, this was back in the 1800s, late 1890s. There was an Austrian engineer called Hans Horbiger. He thought the moon looked very sort of like ice. And then he had this dream of himself floating in space, observing a swinging pendulum whose tether eventually broke, right? And these events were enough for him to develop the World Ice Doctrine. So ice was the fundamental building block of the universe. So basically everything comes from ice. Everything was ice-based. Assuming, therefore, that maybe people, rather than being carbon-based, would be ice-based. It was that whole theory that we've all come from ice.
Now, did anyone question any of this? Because it sounds like the ramblings of someone you would avoid at the pub, doesn't it? Funnily enough.
Well, let me tell you about this particular theory, because very few people gave this theory any credit at all. Until... I mean, you can write this. The Nazis came along, right?
What?
The Nazis came to power, and because they expelled many scientists from Germany, including, of course, Albert Einstein, they were against the whole theory of relativity. They didn't like Einstein, of course, because he was Jewish. And both Adolf Hitler and Heinrich Himmler were proponents of this theory.
See, it's just another reason to not trust the Nazis, isn't it?
And the other one that I really liked was this idea of the spontaneous generation of life.
Spontaneous generation of life. Is that posh speak for unplanned pregnancy?
Well, this goes right the way back to Aristotle. And it sort of lasted until Louis Pasteur disproved it in the mid-19th century. But the idea was...
Have we gone back to milk?
Yeah, he was trying to sort out the blood transfusions. He actually discovered that there isn't a spontaneous generation of life. That was a byproduct of his milk work.
Oh, I thought that was to do with pasteurisation. Okay, right. Okay, he's all over the place.
Again,
maybe that's the key. Maybe milk is life.
The milk of human kindness, of course. If only we could inject that into more people, wouldn't it be
amen,
a better
brother.
World? Yeah, I mean, Louis Pasteur, he was more about the pasteurisation of milk, of course, but I don't think he was working on the milk transfusions, but maybe he was, I don't know. But
fingers in many pies, old Louis. Yeah.
Do you put milk in pies? I'm not sure. Butter, probably. I mean, it's still a milk product. It's still a dairy product. Everything dairy-based, Louis Pasteur. He was all over it.
Oh, dear.
The idea of the spontaneous generation of life is basically the well, it does what it says on the tin, that life just spontaneously generates. There was this idea that scallops, for example, scallops, I don't know quite how you say, is it scallops? Scallops?
I think it depends on your region, but I think scallops or scallops are acceptable, yes.
There was this idea that they just generated from sand.
That isn't true.
Well, no, but that was the idea. There was also the thing that because maggots just appeared in dead flesh, that life just generated.
No, they come from fly larvae and eggs and stuff, from flies. Yeah, you've probably got fly eggs on you now, where if you snuffed it, you'd grow maggots on you. It's not magic.
But it took a long time for people to understand that maggots were laid by other flies. Like, nobody saw maggots sort of being transported. They didn't know that. They just thought life spontaneously generated from within.
People in the past were so arrogant to think, rather than just say, we don't know how this happens, they came up with spontaneous life theory that shit just materialises out of thin air.
Well, if you can't work it out, you know, like if sometimes I go out in the garden.
Oh, hang on. What was the end to that sentence? If you can't work it out, what, guess?
Yeah, like sometimes I go out in the garden, there's a little bug I've never seen before. Yeah, it's just spontaneously generated. I can't explain it. It's just appeared. Okay. It's come from the grass. But this went, I mean, centuries this idea prevailed until Louis Pasteur.
Centuries?
Yes. Well, Aristotle, that's a good 2,000 odd years ago, isn't it? Louis Pasteur in the mid-19th century, that's a long, long old time. I mean, it wasn't wasn't the only idea, but it was an idea that was around for a very long time. It took people a long time to sort of... I mean, people were basically thick in the past, weren't they?
People from the past are thick as pig shit, aren't they?
But there we are. That's it for another Trev and Ben podcast. Before we go, as always, some recommendations for you. I've got four things for you this week, Ben.
Oh, good, because having been running around London losing brain cells all week, I've got nothing, so that'll really help.
What about Billy Joel's latest album? Surely that's, has he got a latest album? He must have. He's still going, right?
I mean, the amount of plugs I've given Billy Joel on this podcast, I think I'm due some tickets, don't you?
What was that song he did about the river? Was it just called The River? You know that one?
To be honest, I only really play Piano Man after I've had quite a few.
See, I mean, this whole thing about you being a Billy Joel fan, you know, one song. No, he did that thing about
Uptown Girl's all right. I don't like Westlife's version, but...
Uptown Girl, yeah, Uptown Girl.
We didn't start the fire. That's good.
Yeah.
The River of Dreams.
River of Dreams. It's a cracking tune. That if you can learn that, Ben, then let's have a night out. You and your fedora, cracking that one out. I'll be a happy man. Anyway, recommendations this week. First of all, I want to give a big thank you to Big Jeff. Last week, he recommended a program called Kin.
How'd you get on?
I have gone through the first season. Very good. Very much enjoying it. The Irish drug families.
Is it quite bleak, though?
Oh, it's fairly bleak. Violent. It's quite violent. Yeah. It takes a while for the violence to really ramp up. There's some violence early on, and then, the it is violent, so it's not probably not everyone's cup of tea, but thank you, Big Jeff. Very much enjoying that. Good recommendation, sir.
Excellent.
The other thing I'm going to recommend, I'm watching a thing on Netflix called The Glory. It's a South Korean revenge psychological thriller. It's about this woman who, when she was at school, was bullied. Like, when I'm saying bullied, like, she was tortured by this group of rich, nasty people. And then it cuts to her being older, and she's got this long, long planned out revenge. And it's I'm about halfway through it. It's South Korean. There's probably a dubbed version on Netflix, but I'm doing it with the subtitles. But again,
of course you are.
Yeah. Everyone's. Well, I've talked about this before. I don't like the dubbing thing. I can't do the noise in the mouth doing different things. Don't like that. It's not good. So that's called The Glory. That's on Netflix. Very, very good. There's a thing on Channel 4. Do you remember quite a while ago, I recommended a drama, I think it was a BBC drama, but it's on Netflix now, I think, called The Serpent. It's the true story of this man called Charles Sobhraj, who in the 70s was supposedly responsible for many murders on the hippie trail in Thailand and those sort of places.
Yeah, anyway, I vaguely remember you mentioning that, yeah.
Yeah, it's a good drama, but Channel 4 have just done a documentary called Charles Sobhraj, Asia's Most Notorious Serial Killer. So he's been released from prison. He only ever got sent to prison for, I think, two of the murders. He denies everything, by the way. But he's now been released from prison, and he agreed to be grilled by a couple of former detectives who gathered lots of evidence against him. And it's a fascinating, because, I mean, he is... You just can't believe a word this man says, I don't think.
He's allegedly.
He's weak for a start. He's appalling. I mean, for a start, you know, for a man who was renowned for his disguises in the 1970s, get a better wig. It's a three-part thing on Channel 4. It's fascinating.
Sounds good. I'll have to give this a look.
And the final thing I'm going to recommend is, I know it's a podcast you recommend sort of semi-regularly, but Richard Herring's
Leicester
Square...
Mr. Baldwin?
No. Richard Herring's Leicester Square Theatre podcast.
Rohlustiper.
Yeah, there's an episode that's come out in the last couple of weeks with Joe Pasquale.
Oh, is he still around?
Yeah, no, I've always sort of liked Joe Pasquale, but I've never really watched much of his stuff. I've seen him, you know, when he's turned up on the Royal Variety Performers, that sort of thing. Fairly funny guy. But he is fucking hilarious. The stories he tells, like, he has gone up in my estimation 100-fold. He's hilarious.
Really? Because the last time I think I ever saw Joe Pasquale on TV, and to be fair, I don't really watch much terrestrial TV anymore, but the last time I saw him was, I think, on I'm a Celebrity, what feels like about 15 years ago.
Well, I think he talks about that. He says about 20 years ago he did that, yeah.
Jesus.
A long time ago. But just some of his stories, just absolutely hilarious. You know, sometimes you need a good laugh. You just need something. And that, for the first time, got me laughing a lot. The story from when he was 13 and in hospital is hilarious.
I'll have to give it a listen.
So there we are. That's it for this week. Thank you very much for listening. Don't forget, you can get in touch with us anytime. We're at Trevor and Bill on X. And we'll catch you again next week. Till then, stay safe, stay well, take it easy.
Bye.